Montana talks here. Live and local. This is Montana Talks with Aaron Flint.
This is Montana Talks with Aaron Flint.
We should have the legislative update going. Go ahead and run it.
Time now for a legislative update brought to you by the Montana Family Foundation. Here's President of the Montana Family Foundation and former Speaker Pro Tem of the Montana House of Representatives, Jeff Laszlofsky.
As we observe Good Friday and the death of Jesus for our sins, I'm reminded of a sermon I once heard entitled, "It's Friday, but Sunday's coming." And it was preached from the perspective of the apostles. It was Friday, and nothing made sense. A week earlier, Jesus was given a royal welcome as he entered Jerusalem. Now, he hung dead on a cross. He who was prophesied to deliver his people now lay sealed in a tomb. He who raised people from the dead now seemed powerless to do the same for himself. It was Friday, but Sunday was coming. The Pharisees had won. The king was dead. The earth shook. The skies were black, and the veil of the temple was torn in two. It was Friday, but Sunday was coming. The disciples were afraid. Their world was turned upside down. What about the prophecies? What about the promises? What about the miracles? Were they all for naught? It was Friday, but Sunday was coming. And finally, Sunday did come. The darkness fled, the stone was rolled away, Jesus rose victorious over sin and death, and those who believed and repented were saved. It was no longer Friday. Sunday was here at last. For those of us in public policy, every day can seem like Friday. We watch God scorned and mocked in public meetings. We watch what he called sin celebrated in the name of tolerance, diversity, and inclusion. We watch the truth claims of the creator of the universe trampled underfoot by scientists who worship man's wisdom rather than the wisdom of an almighty, all-powerful God. We watch in despair as the church remains silent while the future of our nation is shaped and molded by secular humanist politicians, judges, university professors, and teachers. It may seem like Friday, but Sunday's coming. Just as the first Good Friday when the disciples denied Jesus and ran away and hid, the question today is, where's the church? As 2,000 Montana children are killed each year through abortion, where's the church? As the pornography that degrades women and destroys marriages is protected as free speech, where's the church? As children as young as infants are trafficked and sold right under our noses, where's the church? When the U.S. Supreme Court legalized homosexual marriage by a one-vote margin, where was the church? As I said, sometimes it feels like Friday, but Sunday's coming. As we prepare to celebrate Easter, the church is finding its voice. This past year has given us time to reflect on who we are as a nation, who we are as individuals, and to reflect on who we are as servants of the Most High God. While we grieve for those victims of the fighting in Ukraine, Syria, and Israel, we also rejoice at the renewed focus on the value of family, on the value of community, and on the value of life itself. As we prepare to celebrate the resurrection of our Savior, we're reminded once again that it may be Friday, but Sunday's coming. From all of us here at the Montana Family Foundation, this is Jeff Laszlofsky reminding you that this government is your government, and your input does make a difference.
Fantastic update, folks. We'll be right back here, right there. Perfect timing, end of the segment. I'll be live right after this.
Media Minute with Howard Kurtz.
Patty Marin, an angel mom whose daughter was brutally and tragically killed by an illegal immigrant who'd been allowed to stay in this country for too long, was brought into the White House briefing room to talk about her horrible experience. And Fox News carried it live. MSNBC and CNN did not. And that brought a denunciation from the likes of White House Communications Chief Stephen Chung and Deputy Chief of Staff Stephen Miller, who said they don't care about human life. They wouldn't even talk about it. In other words, not only did they not take it live, maybe that was the right decision, maybe it wasn't, but they didn't even mention that she had come into the briefing room. That, to me, is legitimate criticism, but it's also an editorial decision. With your Media Minute, Howie Kurtz, Fox News.
This is House Call for Health. The Food and Drug Administration is warning patients and doctors about the rise of counterfeit Ozempic on the market, despite the fact that a shortage on the popular weight loss drug is over. The agency issued a notice Monday urging pharmacies and consumers to check their Ozempic prescriptions to make sure they are authentic. This comes after the FDA says it seized several hundred units of counterfeit versions of the popular diabetes and weight loss drug. The maker of Ozempic and Wegovy, Novo Nordisk, told the FDA earlier this month that counterfeit injections were being sent outside its authorized supply chain in the U.S. Novo Nordisk is encouraging users to double-check the prescription's lot and serial numbers. The FDA says it's aware of at least six adverse event reports linked to the counterfeit-related lot. The agency and Novo Nordisk are testing the fake products to identify whether they're safe. For more health news, go to foxnewshealth.com. House Call for Health, I'm Anna Eliopoulos, Fox News.
Ranch.
This is Montana Talks with Aaron Flint.
What an absolutely ridiculous stunt by Democrat U.S. Senator Chris Van Hollen going down to El Salvador to go after, to try to meet with some gang member who is an illegal alien. I mean, absolutely ridiculous. And the Democrats are literally making it so obvious that they care more about MS-13 gang member illegal aliens than they do about the American citizens. And it was like, it was so interesting because, so last night we were talking about this live on my Twitch live stream. And one of the Democrats in the chat says, well, you know, I just feel sad for Garcia. That's really what it is I just feel sad for Garcia. And then, of course, this is the same guy that when Laken Riley was brutally raped and murdered, he didn't feel sad for her or feel sad for the family. Never felt sad for all the innocent little American girls that have been raped and murdered by gang members and illegal aliens in this country. Never felt sad for them. But boy, when this MS-13 gangbanger got deported to El Salvador, oh boy, they're sad about that, and they're going to go take trips down there. Democrat Senator Chris Van Hollen takes a trip to El Salvador to try to meet with this MS-13 gang member, illegal alien. But again, never took a trip to meet with American families who had their innocent little kids murdered by illegal aliens. No, never sad about that. And I just think this is an insane issue for the Democrats to go all in on because they're going to lose. Garcia is not coming back. He is an illegal. It's undisputed that he's an illegal alien. See, that's what's so interesting about this is everybody's like, well, he had a, you know, yeah, he's an illegal alien, but, you know, he had a withholding order, you know, because there's this other gang in El Salvador that no longer exists, by the way, that was going to kill him if he got deported back to El Salvador. And so, and the Trump administration is going, okay, well, a couple of things here. Number one, MS-13 are now considered terrorist organizations. He is now considered a terrorist. And under federal law, the withholding order doesn't apply to terrorists. Sorry. Your little withholding order that's meant for, you know, your standard economic migrants, that doesn't apply to MS-13 gang members who are now considered terrorists under federal law. Sorry. So that's the legal argument. And the other, the second one is, of course, is the whole, the withholding order that said he can't go back to, he shouldn't be deported back to El Salvador. That was based on the existence of MS-13's rival gang down there, which no longer exists. And so, for me, it's like, I don't care. I don't care if he's MS-13. There's news, this morning about how this same gang member was suspected of human trafficking just as recently as a couple of years ago. There was like a, and I haven't read the full story, but it's like there was a Tennessee traffic stop where he was suspected of human trafficking and the Biden administration like refused to do anything about it type of thing. But this guy's a bad guy. And again, I don't care about that. I don't care that he's MS-13. I don't care that he's got a deportation order. I don't care that he had a withholding order. None of it matters. Because he's an illegal alien. He's from El Salvador. That's all we need to know. He needs to go home. He needs to be in El Salvador. He's not from here. He's not an American. He's an El Salvadoran citizen. He's an illegal alien. Who cares if he's MS-13 or if he's a gangbanger or if he's a drug trafficker or if he's suspected of human trafficking or if he had a deportation order or if he had a withholding order, whatever. Doesn't matter. Everybody agrees. Even the Democrats admit it. Even the Democrats admit it. This guy is an illegal alien. He has no right to be here. And so earlier I was talking about how, you know, the due process clause, that's only triggered if the government's trying to take a right away from you. So, for example, if the government were to try to take away your Social Security because maybe there's a law that says if you do something, then you lose your Social Security. And I'm just, this hypothetical, that doesn't exist, but theoretically. And then, in fact, if I recall from law school, the U.S. Supreme Court case that said basically, like, you're entitled to due process if the government ever tries to take away your entitlements, that is one of, like, the foundational due process cases from the Supreme Court. I can't remember what it was, but essentially... and that's maybe why they're called entitlements, too, frankly, is because if they try to take them away, they trigger due process requirements. But the point being is that the due process clause is only triggered if the government is trying to take something away from you, if they're trying to lock you up, if they're trying to take your property, if they're trying to take your life. That's what it's really about. The 14th Amendment says no person shall be deprived of life without due process. No person shall be deprived of property without due process. But the way that those are essentially interpreted is you have to have a right to something, and the government has to be trying to take that right from you for there even to be a requirement of due process. And so hold on. If you admit that you're an illegal alien and you admit that you have no right to be here, you're not entitled to due process. You would be – now here's where this goes differently. You would be entitled to due process if the federal government – an immigration officer is using all of the data at the and there's federal government's got a lot of data to figure this stuff out. If the federal government, let's say they're interviewing you, whether it's at the border or in a car stop or maybe they raided a work, but it doesn't matter where or how or when. Let's say there's an immigration officer interviewing somebody and they say, hey, we've got federal data and biometric data and all sorts of databases, and we've determined you're an illegal alien. And that person says, no, I'm actually an American citizen. Okay, at that point, they might be entitled to some more. But if they say, oh, yeah, no, that's true, I'm an illegal alien, they need to be sent home ASAP. What more due process do you need? They admitted they're illegal.
Fox Country.
I'm Michelle Paluno. Country star Eric Church has officially broken ground on a new housing development called Blue Haven in Newland, North Carolina. The project aims to help families displaced by Hurricane Helene last September. The initiative will create 40 to 45 energy-efficient homes. The singer's nonprofit, Chief Cares, has committed to covering housing costs for up to 3 years, after which the families will have the option to purchase their homes. The country star called the project a generational shift in a response to a generational disaster like Helene. Country star Thomas Rhett broke his ankle after a nasty fall while taking the stage as a surprise guest for Christian artist Forrest Frank's Child of God tour stop in Nashville. As he made his way down the steps, it appears he missed a step where his ankle gave way. Like a true professional, he sang through the pain. His wife Lauren rolled him out of the venue in a wheelchair. That's Fox Country on Fox News.
Saving you money, I'm Hillary Barsky. Do you feel like you're spending too much for your cell phone plan? Well, a lot of plans from major wireless providers can be rather costly, but there are things you can do to lower the expense. In terms of unlimited data plans, you need to ask yourself if you actually need to use that much data per month. Whether you're shopping for a phone plan at a new company or sticking with your current provider, opting for a plan with limited high-speed data is a great way to save. And perhaps consider a mobile virtual network operator like Mint Mobile or Visible, which both offer cheaper plans by operating on the networks of larger carriers. And it might seem like you'll be paying a hefty price for multiple lines. However, with many plans, you'll get a significant discount for having two or more lines for family plans. And check to see if you qualify for additional discounts. Many major wireless providers may offer special deals for members of the military, teachers, and seniors, and there might be discounts available through your employer. Saving you money, Hillary Barsky, Fox News.
Hey!
This is where Montana talks ag with Lane Nordland.
With it being Good Friday, USDA pushed up several of their important agriculture reports, including the April 1st cattle on feed report. It was released yesterday, and that report shows that there were 11.6 million head of cattle on feed, down 2% from a year ago on April 1st. Steers made up 62% of the total at 7.26 million head, while heifers totaled 4.38 million head, down 4%. March placements rose 5% year over year to 1.84 million head, with increases across all weight classes and in key states like Arizona, Idaho, and Nebraska. Marketings in March are up 1% to 1.73 million head. But Shaley Stewart with DTN notes that the rise in placements shouldn't be alarming to the cattle market, given the sharp drop seen in March 2024, along with record sale barn prices and tightening feeder supplies. Overall, she says the report is viewed as neutral to slightly bearish. And there was a strong offering of cattle at the public auction yards in Billings this week, with feeder steers 600 to 800 pounds trading $20 to $25 higher. Heifers were mostly $25 higher as well. The 6 to 6.5 weight steers 315 to 358, with heifers weighing 5.5 to 6 weight 310 up to $3.63. I'm Lane Nordland.
Montana Talks with Aaron Flint.
David Noble live from Billings to our audience worldwide. Montana Talks open phones 406-294-0970. Folks, give me a call here. Give me some content. Help me out here. 406-294-0970. Hey, we were talking about a bill that's up for vote today in the Montana legislature about a referendum to change the Montana Constitution to say that only U.S. citizens can vote. Well, kind of coincidental, but the Daily Caller had a story out yesterday around noon. They posted this. Several Democrats cannot answer why they want non-citizens voting in U.S. elections. And you may think, like, oh, that's crazy. That's insane. Like, you know, that's already the law. No, folks, it's not crazy. It's not. We had a caller in the last hour saying, no, this is not something to take lightly, because there are lots of Democrats across the country who actually think that legal aliens, or frankly legal immigrants that may have a visa or a green card or lawful permanent residency, whatever the heck that, there are lots of Democrats that say no, they should have the right to vote, and especially at the city and the county level. And the Democrat argument on that sort of goes, well, look, we don't, you know, we sort of understand them not having a vote, you know, maybe the federal and the state level, but these are people that live in the city and they're impacted by the city policies, and so they really should get a vote to vote in the city. And it's like, well, that logic actually applies to everything, so there's really no ending point to that logic. So, no, I reject that argument. It would be my thought. But they've actually passed laws in some Democrat cities where they actually say, yeah, no, immigrants, non-citizens can vote. And courts have struck a lot of those down, because most state constitutions have something that kind of suggests that only citizens can vote. Crazy to me that the Montana Constitution doesn't have that in there. It's like, okay, I'm pretty sure the New York Constitution does, which is why I think in New York they had a city that tried to allow non-citizens to vote, and it got struck down by the New York courts. But boy, you know, I mean, here we are in Montana, the abortion capital of the Mountain West, the marijuana capital of the Mountain West. It's kind of sad, and I guess here we are as well. We're going to be the blowout spending capital of the Mountain West. It's just so embarrassing. It's just so embarrassing as a Montanan, as a Mountain West, true believer, sort of. I'm not going anywhere, but think about like North Dakota, South Dakota, you know, Wyoming, Idaho, etc. All of those states, are not doing what we're doing here. They're not passing blowout budgets, massive 18% increases in spending. They're not the abortion capitals where they've got unlimited abortions. They're not the marijuana capitals where you got just marijuana everywhere. Isn't it just sad that's what Montana has become? Montana has essentially become like the New York City and the Los Angeles, or the Massachusetts and the California, the Oregon and the California of the mountain, whatever you want to call us. But we got to get some. Hey, check this out. We had a caller say, "Hey, what?" Or actually, no, this was a message. Let me read this message because I got an answer for this. Robert, 1969 in Billings, says, "What can we do as Montanans to dump these nasty nine? Do we have to wait till next election cycle?" So I went ahead and looked at it. I looked this up. There is something called the Montana Recall Act. And this is set forth under Montana Code 2-16-601 at SEC. If you're a lawyer, you know what that means. But in here, it does talk about how you can recall legislators, and it says, this is MCA 216-603, any person holding a public office of the state or any of its political subdivisions, to include counties and cities, is subject to recall. A officer holding an elective office may be recalled by the voters. A public officer holding an appointed office may be recalled by the voters. Interesting. But this is where it sort of comes out as like very, very weak. Okay. Physical or mental lack of fitness, incompetence, violation of the oath of office, official misconduct, or conviction of a felony are the only grounds for recall in Montana. A person may not be recalled for performing a mandatory duty of the office, or for not performing any act that would subject the person to prosecution. And so I don't know if this has ever been litigated or if the courts have ever had an ability to chime in on that. But the limitations of mental or lack of fitness, incompetence, violation of the oath of office, official misconduct, those, you know, you notice one of those is not there that, hey, they lied to the voters during their campaign. They fraudulently got their office. We don't like the way they're voting in the legislature. None of those are actual bases to recall. And I don't know, maybe that's why you haven't seen a lot of recalls in Montana. I'm not really sure. Maybe some callers might know. Big news on that front is that looks like we're getting very, very close to having the deal with Ukraine on the rare earth minerals locked in. It sounds like that could be happening here very quickly. But that's not good, unfortunately. It's not good news that the Trump administration has not been able to negotiate a resolution of this war. Now, of course, I don't blame Trump for that. It, obviously, this has been going on long before him. There's a lot of big factors at play. And the problem is, I think, as somebody who studied international relations at the University of Montana, got an international relations degree. And one of the things you learn in there, though, is that, like, countries oftentimes will not end a war or negotiate a resolution to the war if they believe that continued fighting would put them in a better position. So in order to have a negotiated resolution to the war, you kind of need to have basically both sides feeling that continued fighting won't benefit them, whether it's a stalemate, whether they think continued fighting will they'll lose. But otherwise, I mean, if you don't have that, then there's no incentive for that. And so you either have total victory by one side, or you have both sides eventually realize that continued fighting is not serving their interests. I think the problem here is that you've got initially the problem was Ukraine, I think, believed that continued fighting would help Ukraine because they think they can take it back. And I think what's driving that is, number one, Europe kind of being willing to try to step up if America pulls back on our aid. And then I think there's probably also corruption at play and Zelensky having issues and that sort of thing. I don't know what Russia thinks. I don't know if Russia actually thinks that continued fighting in Ukraine will benefit. I think it probably does in terms of the actual war because Russia is slowly gaining. However, It's costing Russia a lot. They're losing lots and lots of troops. Their economy is struggling. I don't know how long they can continue it. It does seem like a situation where both sides should be incentivized to end this thing. And then I think initially, early on in these negotiations, I think Trump was having difficulties getting Ukraine to the table. But now it sort of seems like now it's actually getting Russia to the table. Sort of the sense I got early on was sort of Russia was willing to do a deal, willing to come to the table, and Trump was having a hard time getting Zelensky on board. But I think even in Politico Playbook this morning, they're mentioning we're very, very close to having this minerals deal signed with Ukraine. In fact, I think I was watching a Trump press conference either yesterday or the day before, and he said, yeah, he thinks we've got the deal finalized. We're going to have this Ukrainian rare earth deal. And that's great. I think that deal is fantastic because here's what it does. It enables the United States to continue to support Ukraine while at the same time we actually get more out of it than we were before. We get the right to these rare earths, which actually could be very, very important given what's going on with China right now. Although yesterday Trump said he's talking to China. We're about to have a deal with China, folks.
It's morning in Montana. This is Montana Talks with Aaron Flint.
So we got this bill up at the Montana legislature today about citizens only voting in Montana. The Daily Caller has a story. Democrat lawmakers straight up refusing to answer why they voted against a measure to ensure that non-citizens cannot vote in U.S. elections. Four Democrat lawmakers joins Republicans to pass the Safeguard American Voter Eligibility Act, which would require states to obtain proof of citizenship before registering an individual to vote and remove all non-citizens from existing voters. This is another example of what's going on in this country that is just such a mind blow to me as a Montanan. Okay, Washington, D.C. is now more conservative than Helena. The federal government is more right-wing and more conservative than the state government in Montana. Think about that. Who would have ever thought? And it's not just on this issue or that issue. It's on almost every issue, whether it's spending, you know, Medicaid expansion, immigration issues, sort of you name it, abortion. A trans issue. I mean, go down the list. Taxes, property tax. I mean, of course, federal government doesn't have real estate property taxes. But, I mean, it's just like, okay, so you've literally got the federal government moving to the right, moving conservative on various issues, whether it's something like this or anything. And then you've got the state government here in Montana moving to the left, even though we put in place a full-blown, exclusively Republican statewide official the positions and Republicans in the legislature, but we ultimately ended up with Democrat controlled legislature, which is just crazy. But these Democrats at the national level voted against this legislation requiring only citizens to be registered to vote. And then what the Democrats leave, well, that's already the law. Yeah, we know that's already the law. The problem is that all you have to do is just check the box and say, I'm a citizen. And most people don't even read the freaking box. They're just like, oh, yeah, check that, check that, check that. And they turn it in. And then you've got all these, you know, motor voter laws and automatic voter registration if you get on food stamps. That's the crazy thing, too. And I don't know if people know this, but the state government actually sends out voter registration forms to anybody on welfare or food stamps or anything like that. Now, I never got anything in the mail from the state government with a voter registration form on it. You tell me, did you guys, anybody else out there, other than maybe if you were going through a rough spot and you were on welfare or food stamps, other than that, I mean, I've never had the government send me something in the mail that, hey, here's a voter registration form. But everybody out there on food stamps and welfare gets it in the mail, a voter registration form. But these Democrats will typically say, that's already the law. We don't need to do anything. Well, if that's already the law, then how is it that so many illegal aliens and or non-citizens are getting registered to vote? An individual with the National Republican Congressional Committee said, Congresswoman, this is to Debbie Wasserman Schultz, Congresswoman, why do you want non-citizens to vote in U.S. elections? Why do you not want to keep American elections safe and secure? And, of course, they didn't. They didn't bother to answer. You know, I'd sort of ask the same, I'd ask the same people up in Helena. I'd ask them the same question. And here's the question. Why do you want non-citizens voting in our elections? Can we get that question posed to all the Democrats up there in Helena, and frankly, the Republicans that are not voting in favor of this whole thing? Why do you want non-citizens voting? Apparently, this Maryland Democrat Senator Chris Van Hollen actually got to meet with this MS-13 gang member in El Salvador. This is insane to me, too. The media is still reporting that this guy was wrongfully deported. Okay, he wasn't. What happened was there was a DOJ lawyer who went rogue and put in a court filing that he was wrongly deported through an administrative error. And that was incorrect, and that lawyer's been fired. And that's not the position of the White House. The position of the White House is this. So first of all, folks, there's two different types of judges in courts. There's Article I judges and there's Article III judges. Okay, Article III judges are your full-blown federal judges, lifetime appointments. And they're a full-blown federal judge. That's an Article III judge. They have lifetime appointments, et cetera, et cetera. An Article I judge is a judge that's in the executive branch that does not have lifetime appointments, that does not have the same powers and jurisdictions as Article III judges. And Article I judges are ALJs, administrative law judges. So, for example, Social Security will have a bunch of ALJs to make determinations on whether you're entitled to, you know, Social Security disability or those types of things. And then in immigration, we have a lot of administrative law judges in immigration. Okay, those ALJs in our Social Security system or immigration system, those are not judiciary positions. Those are not Article 3. And Article 1 of the Constitution is at Congress. These are Article 2 judges, I think, or Article 1 or 2. I don't know if they're – either way, they're not Article 3 judges. Article 3 is the judiciary. Article 2 is the presidency. Article 1 is Congress. And so you've got these administrative judges in these administrative hearings, and those are sufficient to give these people – quote unquote due process. This Garcia guy, this MS-13 gang, he went through those hearings. He went through the administrative court proceedings. Now, he had a deportation order issued. It's uncontested. He's an illegal alien. What the Democrats are saying is he was wrongly deported to El Salvador. He shouldn't have been deported to El Salvador, even though he's from El Salvador. He's an El Salvadorian citizen because of this quote unquote withholding order. And the withholding order says, hey, you know, yeah, you can deport him. Just don't deport him to El Salvador because, you know, there's this other gang there that'll kill him. And we're a good country. We don't deport people back to countries if it's very clear they'll get killed if you do that. But here's the issue. And here's the legal position of the Trump administration. What they'll tell you is that, okay, those withholding orders are not from Article 3 judges. Those are from Article 1 judges, Article 2 judges, whatever they are, the immigration judges. Those rules do not apply to terrorists. And so when the Trump administration designated MS-13 as a terrorist organization, the withholding order no longer applies. Because the withholding order and all of the statutes and rules governing the withholding orders, those do not apply to terrorists and terrorist-designated organizations. So legally, once Trump declared MS-13 a terrorist organization, at that point, the Trump administration was legally entitled to deport this guy back to his home. We sent him home. We sent him to El Salvador. That's the position. What's insane to me, though, is the media is still saying two things that are false about this. Number one, that this is a Maryland man. This is not a Maryland man. This is an El Salvadoran citizen. This is an illegal alien. Okay. Number two, they are continuing to say that he was wrongly deported. And they're even saying that the White House continues to take the position that he was wrongly deported, which is not true. That is not true. The Trump administration is not saying that he was wrongly deported. The Trump administration is saying that he was rightfully deported. And yeah, there is a court filing from, and I'm assuming the way that this sort of happened was there's a whole bunch of cases, a ton of lawsuits. The Department of Justice, the United States Department of Justice has, I don't know how many lawyers, tons and tons of lawyers. They're handling a bunch of lawsuits. These are fast-paced lawsuits. You've got to get stuff filed ASAP, especially when it's something like this in an injunction type case where you've got to, the plaintiff is seeking a court order very quickly. The government's got to get something on file in response ASAP. You got to have a hearing ASAP. All this stuff's going quickly. And some DOJ lawyer looked at it and said, oh, yeah, no, this guy had a withholding order. He shouldn't have been gone to El Salvador, and said, hey, it was administrative error. And then after that, after this thing blew up, then hold on. No, that's not true. No, this is a terrorist. Withholding orders don't apply to terrorists. And that lawyer that put that in there, and I don't know if maybe it was intentional, maybe it's not. I'm assuming since he got fired, I'm assuming it was intentional that DOJ lawyer put in there that this was an administrative error. Because if that DOJ lawyer was just like, oh, hey, yeah, there's a withholding order, like, okay, it looks like an administrative error. That's sort of one thing you don't fire him for. If that lawyer looked at it and said, hey, I see this withholding order. I see that the government's been sued to either stop this deportation or try to bring this guy back. I see that withholding order. But, also I see here President Trump's executive order declaring and designating MS-13 as a terrorist organization. And I see here in this guy's records and files that he is MS-13, a.k.a. a terrorist. But I'm going to go ahead and just file this thing and say this was a wrongful deportation, an administrative error because of this withholding. Anyway, that's how you get fired. That's how you get fired. And so that's kind of and I don't know which one of those happened, but he got fired, so I'm assuming it was sort of that latter one. But anyways, the point being, just recognize, when the media is out there saying that he was wrongly deported, he was not. When the media is out there saying he's a Maryland man, he's not.
Fox News commentary.
Democrats and media outlets continually leave out the immigration status of their martyrs, but why? I'm Tommy Lahren. More next.
It's the Will King Podcast.
Donald Trump, multiple cases of lawfare in the United States trying to bar him from running for president here in the U.S. At some point, it can't just be TDS. It's not a localized problem. It's a global problem. And you have to wonder, what's the global ideology? What's the global organization? What's the global push to take down not just a man in Donald Trump, but policies, an administration, and an ideology spanning across the world?
Streaming live 12 p.m. Eastern weekdays on FoxNews.com and the Fox News YouTube channel.
It's pretty clear the Democrat Party as a whole doesn't consider illegal immigration to be such a bad thing. After all, President Biden presided over an unprecedented invasion of millions into our country as Democrats and media members either ignored it or insisted it wasn't a crisis. So why then do they scrub the word illegal from their vocabulary when discussing or writing about these individuals? We've been inundated with headlines about the supposed Maryland father they so desperately want back from El Salvador, but time and time again, they refuse to acknowledge his immigration status as illegal. If they really take little to no issue with people from around the world crossing into our country illegally, then why whitewash it from the narrative? If that method of immigration is so noble and righteous, say it with your whole chest. Same goes for the journalists. I'm Tommy Lahren, and you can watch my show, Tommy Lahren is Fearless, at Outkick.com. It is time to take the quiz.
It's five questions in less than 5 minutes. We ask people on the streets of New York City to play along. Let's see how you do.
Take the quiz every day at thequiz.fox. Then come back here to see how you did.
Thank you for taking the quiz.
Is the city of Billings about to bust a cap on taxpayers? And is this what's holding up property tax relief? That story, MontanaTalks.com.
Fox Country.
I'm Michelle Paluno. Country star Eric Church has officially broken ground on a new housing development called Blue Haven in Newland, North Carolina. The project aims to help families displaced by Hurricane Helene last September. The initiative will create 40 to 45 energy-efficient homes. The singer's nonprofit Chief Cares has committed to covering housing costs for up to 3 years, after which the families will have the option to purchase their homes. The country star called the project a generational shift and a response to a generational disaster like Helene.
Yeah,
country star Thomas Rhett broke his ankle after a nasty fall while taking the stage as a surprise guest for Christian artist Forrest Frank's Child of God tour stop in Nashville. As he made his way down the steps, it appears he missed a step where his ankle gave way. Like a true professional, he sang through the pain. His wife, Lauren, rolled him out of the venue in a wheelchair.
But whatever you do, don't let it get worse. You don't have to live with this anymore. Go check it out now. Just click over to crystalflesh.com.
Big topics, big ideas, big sky, Montana Talks.
Live to our audience worldwide, it's David Noble filling in for Aaron Flynn on Montana Talks, 406-294-0970. You can find me online at LectureFan, LCTRFAN. Let's go to Kat in Eastern Montana. Kat, let her rip.
Am I on already?
You are. Let her rip.
Okay, well, good morning, Montana, and thank you, David, and thank you to our veterans. Happy Good Friday. But, David, you're doing a really great job, so it's nice to hear you this morning.
Thank you so much.
I heard you talking this morning about recalling the Nasty Nine in the State Senate, and obviously we can't recall the Republican traitors, as I call them, because, you know, they're on a four-year term. But and it's not legal in our Constitution. But let's focus on what we can do. And in the spirit of this Good Friday and the good Lord creating miracles, let's focus on the races in the House. And those primaries there are, you know, there's about 12 to 15 House Republican members that need a primary.
Absolutely.
So maybe if we zero in on replacing these representatives, we can perhaps inspire these senators to start what I call acting right. Now, I feel like the actions could change hearts and minds if we focus on what we can do. And David, you're absolutely right. Montana is more liberal than D.C. right now. And so, you know, we must expose the truth and hold our elected officials accountable. And that's going to look different to different constituents. And how are we going to get these rogue Montana judges in line? Like, we have to work together, stay informed, stepping out of our comfort zones, because it is the duty of we the people to act. And that's why you do what you do, David. That's why Aaron does what he does. That's why John Jackson does what he does. And that's what I do every single day. And most importantly, pray. Praying is so underrated. So I wanted to deliver a message of hope today, because God is a waymaker. He is a redeemer through the blood of his son, Jesus Christ. And that's my hope for today. So I wanted to wish everybody a happy Easter and just pray and know that God is making a way.
Amen. Amen to that. No, Kat, you're absolutely right, especially with these House members, because what's crazy is they just... there goes Kat. I don't know if she was... Not sure if she was going to have anything to follow up on. I was going to... Because Kat made a really good point, right, which is you can focus on these House primaries that are coming up. And I agree with that, because last night, the Montana Senate passed a blowout spending budget, 18% increase in spending in the general fund, according to Senator Carl Glynn, one of my favorite senators up there in Helena right now. 18% increase in spending. Let me ask you guys, folks, can you guys increase your spending 18%? I can't. I can't increase my spending 18%. Can you guys? It's just crazy. And not only that, but the budget they passed last night puts us on a path here in Montana to almost a $1 billion deficit by 2029. It's going to put us into the red next year. This is an absolute joke. The legislative fiscal division report came out. This is a nonpartisan legislative fiscal division. I guess that's kind of like the equivalent to the CBO at the federal level. From just a week ago, says that this budget puts the state to a deficit next year, almost a $1 billion deficit, $689 million. I round that up to $700 million, then round that up to $1 billion. Almost a $689 million annual budget deficit by 2029 if this budget goes through. And what Kat was saying is, hey, there's a lot of stuff we can do in the House, and those primaries are, what would they be next year? So let's focus on that, because here's the deal. Okay, even though in the Senate, this thing passed with basically all Democrats, and then basically all Democrats. You know, some of them were the rhinos. But it passed in the House with about 50% Democrats in favor of it, 50% Democrats against it, 50% Republicans in favor of it, 50% Republicans against it. That's what Aaron Flint called the Uniparty, and that is the Uniparty. What in the world is going on? Kat is absolutely right. All of those House members, everybody that voted for this blowout spending budget, they need to be looked at very, very closely. Well said, Kat.
Here's a look at your Montana weather for Billings and Bozeman. With sunny skies across the area for today, high temperatures will range from the lower 40s in Bozeman to the mid-40s in Billings. Then skies stay clear tonight with a low in the low to mid-20s. And then the outlook into the weekend calls for more sunshine Saturday with high temperatures from the mid to upper 50s. Clear to partly cloudy skies take us into Saturday night. That's a look at your Montana weather on Montana Talks. I'm meteorologist Paul Frombly.
Man, we simply ran out of time with Thursday's Montana Talks. We had a ton of great callers on the line. I had even more highlights from the Bernie Sanders AOC rally in Missoula that I had racked and stacked ready to share with you, but we simply ran out of time. Hey, but don't worry. We got a great Freedom Friday coming up for you right here with Montana Talks, the show where you get to talk. Our friend David Noble, guest hosting the show once again, the Manhattan, Montana kid. He's an attorney. Great insight as always. David Noble, Friday's Montana Talk.